Hello and welcome back. It's been a week where the question of who actually controls the tools you depend on stopped being theoretical. Let me start with what dominated the conversation across almost every channel this week, which is the slow-motion collision between Claude Code and everything built around it. Anthropic announced that starting June the 15th, third-party apps and the Agent SDK will move into a separate monthly credit pool. $200 worth. That, according to Theo and Melvinx, effectively cuts usable capacity by somewhere between 25 and 40 times compared to what people were getting before. Theo, who's been building on top of Claude via OpenClaw, said publicly he's done with that approach. Melvinx switched to Codex. World of AI covered the announcement with barely concealed frustration. And Nate Herc, who has been one of the more measured voices on Claude tooling, essentially reframed the whole situation as a free trial period that's now ending. The company's got your usage data, now the meter starts. The thing is, Anthropic's reasoning isn't cynical, it's structural. According to Nate B. Jones, the company planned for 10 times growth and got 80 times. That's not a pricing strategy failing. That's a compute problem failing. And when you're burning through infrastructure at that rate, you start rationing. The problem is that the rationing hits the exact people who are most invested in the ecosystem. The developers building on top of it, the open source integrations, the third-party tooling. Theo's point is sharp. This isn't just an inconvenience. It's a signal about who Anthropic's product is actually designed for. Which brings us to the cover story of the week, because it frames everything else. On one side, you have Claude Code, which got genuinely impressive updates. The Agent View dashboard, which World of AI and Nate Herc both walked through in detail, lets you manage parallel sessions in a single terminal view, switch between them, monitor their status. The new slash goal feature lets you set a long-running objective and have Claude work toward it autonomously, looping until it's done. Julian Ivanov showed how you can now control Claude Code remotely from your phone. These are real improvements to a real product. On the other side, you have Hermes Agent, which had a significant week of its own. Version 2 dropped with a proper desktop app, a Kanban board, Kantai, computer use support on macOS, integration with Qwen 3.6, plus at no cost for a limited period, and its own equivalent of slash goal for persistent autonomous operation. Alex Finn ran it on an NVIDIA DGX Spark with Qwen 3.6, 27B running locally, generating AI stock reports, repurposing YouTube content, vibe coding a to-do app, all without a subscription meter running in the background. AI Foundations and Nate Herc both published full setup courses for Hermes this week, which tells you something about where the momentum is. What separates these two isn't really capability at this point. It's architecture. Claude Code lives inside Anthropic's infrastructure, which means when Anthropic changes its pricing model, your workflow changes with it. Hermes runs on a VPS or your own hardware, accumulates knowledge persistently, and costs nothing beyond the infrastructure you're already paying for. Cole Medin's Arkhan project is a third path, an open source harness builder that uses Claude Code as a backend but doesn't bind you to its subscription logic. And this week, the Arkhan Workflow Marketplace went live, letting users share and discover workflows with automated pull request validation. The market for agent infrastructure that isn't controlled by the big labs is clearly moving. The deployment question is becoming the central question. Not which model is smarter, but who owns the layer between you and the model. Nate B. Jones made this point in a different register when he described what he's calling the implementation layer. The actual work of translating a generic AI agent into something that understands your business objects, your data permissions, your authority limits, your audit requirements. His argument is that this layer is where the real value in the agentic era lives. And it's the one thing that neither Anthropic nor OpenAI can capture with a product launch, because it's customer-specific by definition. McKinsey, BCG, Accenture, and private equity firms with thousands of portfolio companies are all positioning aggressively in this space right now. Worth thinking about. The pricing story has a corporate parallel that Jones also covered in detail. Salesforce is reporting $800 million in annualized revenue from Agentforce, measuring what it calls agentic work units. Not tokens, not seats, but discrete agent actions. Microsoft is launching Agent 365 at $15 per user per month with a separate governance license. Service. Now has something called Action Fabric. The pattern is consistent. Every major platform is redefining the unit of value to be the action the agent takes, not the human who triggered it. Jones's point, and it's a good one, is that your negotiating leverage with these vendors exists exactly once, before your workflows are in production. After that, the asymmetry is theirs. The McKinsey security incident is a useful case study here. Jones covered it carefully. A startup called CodeWall found that McKinsey's internal AI platform, Lily, had 22 of 200 API endpoints deployed without authentication, including a writable production connection. For $20, an autonomous agent got full read and write access to tens of millions of chat messages and all the system prompts on the platform. Classic SQL injection, a vulnerability that's been understood since 1998. The failure wasn't technical incompetence. McKinsey has strong engineering teams. The failure was organizational. Security review came too late in the procurement sequence. Jones's lesson is that the traditional enterprise procurement process, strategy, then purchase, then security review, doesn't work for agentic systems because the security architecture has to be designed before you buy, not cleaned up after. A few model developments worth noting. Anthropic's Mythos preview was independently evaluated by XBO and the UK AI Security Institute and outperformed GPT 5.5 on cybersecurity tasks. Attack chain construction, vulnerability discovery, that kind of thing. Theo covered the broader implication in a separate video. AI is now genuinely accelerating the discovery and exploitation of security vulnerabilities, and the 90-day disclosure window that the industry has operated on is increasingly inadequate. He's not being alarmist about it. He's being precise. On the Google side, World of AI tested internal Gemini 3.2 variants, codenamed Fanta, Sprite, and Cola, which is a naming convention that suggests someone at Google has opinions about soft drinks, and found the code and UI generation underwhelming relative to expectations. The more promising Checkpoint series, internally called Cappuccino, is being positioned toward Gemini 3.5 Flash. Separately, a multimodal video model called Gemini Omni was accidentally surfaced to some users in the app, and early comparisons put it alongside Sora 2, in quality. Whether that holds up at scale is another question. OpenAI, meanwhile, has internal builds of GPT 5.6 under codenames Ember Alpha and Beacon Alpha, and a new model called SubQ announced a 12 million token context window using what it describes as subquadratic sparse attention architecture. AI MRT Arnie covered it with appropriate skepticism, noting that the benchmarks are limited and contested, and there's no technical paper yet. Interesting if true. Treat with caution until there's more to verify. On the open source and local side, World of AI showed that you can now run Codex CLI with Ollama, which means models like DeepSeek, Gemma 4, or Qwen 3 can be used locally and for free inside Codex. Neural 9 covered ONNX as a framework-agnostic model exchange format. The basic pitch is that you can train in PyTorch or TensorFlow and deploy without those frameworks as dependencies, which matters in production environments where you'd rather not carry the full framework overhead. Melvinks documented his switch from Claude Code to Codex in some detail. Lower token costs, multitasking via work trees, a cleaner UI, and a migration path for skills via Simlinks. He's also moving his stack from Next.js to TanStack Start, and from Prisma to Convex, and he laid out the reasoning for both in separate videos. The TanStack case is partly about build speed and partly about the fact that Next.js's server component model is genuinely hard for LLMs to reason about correctly, which creates friction in AI-assisted development. The Convex case is about real-time synchronization across clients without having to manually manage cache invalidation and webhooks. Practical stuff, not hype. Matt Pocock's skills repository hit 70,000 GitHub stars this week, and he shipped several new additions. A slash handoff skill for context-preserving agent transitions, a slash prototype skill for generating UI variants, and a replacement for the old slash grill me called grill with docs, which uses domain-driven design vocabulary to build a shared language document that persists across sessions. Mark Kashef published a useful counterpoint, arguing that most skill collections actively hurt performance through token overload, and laid out 8 audit criteria for trimming them down. Both perspectives are right. It depends on how carefully the skills were written in the first place. Nate B. Jones also covered the retrieval architecture question in depth, which is worth a mention. The core argument is that classical RAG, chunking documents and doing vector similarity search, was designed for chatbots, not agents. Agents need cross-referenced context across long documents, not 3 semantically similar paragraphs. Pinecone is updating its retrieval interface with something called NoQL to carry intent, filters, and access policy. Page Index argues that some documents, like contracts with definitions scattered across 40 pages, shouldn't be chunked at all. Their hierarchical structure is the meaning. SAP acquired 2 companies to handle structured enterprise data. Microsoft is pushing graph-based retrieval for relational queries. The principle Jones articulates is simple. Match the retrieval unit to the job. Chunks for FAQs, document trees for filings, tables for financial analysis, graphs for dependencies. Bigger context windows don't automatically solve this. The problem is whether the information arrives in a form the model can reliably use. The LLM as judge pattern got a thorough treatment this week too. The basic idea is that instead of relying on a single agent to both execute and validate its own actions, you put a specialized judge model at the action boundary, the exact moment a tool call is about to fire, and it decides between allowing, blocking, requesting revision, or escalating to human review. Jones categorized agent actions into 4 risk tiers: read-only, reversible writes, external actions like emails and pull requests, and high-risk operations like spending money or deleting data. The judge handles the first 3 autonomously at varying confidence thresholds. The 4th tier requires explicit human approval. The implementation detail that matters most is that the judge sits at the boundary, not somewhere upstream in the reasoning chain. On the content and business side, Kyle Balmer showed his system for producing 20-plus pieces of content daily with 2 people and AI agents: Hermes for topic scouting and script generation, ChatGPT images for slides, Descript for transcripts, ManyChat for email capture at 100 to 300 new addresses daily. His thesis, which I think is genuinely interesting, is that the flood of AI-generated content makes live presence and on-camera authenticity more valuable, not less. The automation handles the repetitive production work precisely so the human can show up more for the parts that can't be automated. A few quick items. Coding with Lewis traced the arc of Meta's Llama, from open source hero to the Llama 4 release, which was dropped on a Saturday without warning and quickly revealed to have used manipulated benchmarks. The community trust that Meta had built over years evaporated fast. It's a useful reminder that benchmark credibility is genuinely fragile and that the open source community has a long memory. The Pax Silica interview on No Priors with Jacob Hellberg covered the US initiative to secure AI supply chains across a 14-country coalition, with a forward-deployed industrial zone in the Philippines, combining American legal frameworks with local manufacturing advantages. And Longlake Management announced a $6.3 billion acquisition of American Express Global Business Travel, positioning it as the first AI-driven take-private of a public company via their Nexus platform. The thread that runs through all of this, if I had to name one, is that the interesting competition in AI right now isn't between models. Models are good enough. The competition is about who controls the deployment layer, the infrastructure, the pricing, the data contracts, the audit trails, the workflow logic that turns a capable model into something a business can actually depend on. Anthropic's pricing change this week wasn't a mistake or a betrayal. It was a clarification. The question it forces is whether you want to build on someone else's infrastructure or your own. And for the first time, the open source alternatives are mature enough that the question is genuinely open.